You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I just couldn't help myself. Could not help myself this weekend. I had every reason not to go fishing, but of course I went fishing. Had my oldest son's bachelor party up in beautiful New Orleans, as they say. Had a lot of fun Thursday, a lot of fun Friday. Saturday comes and I'm like, I got to go fishing. So I left them to do all the crazy stuff Saturday and Saturday night and Sunday. They went to the Saints game and I went on to beautiful Sargent. Nothing like a 6-hour drive on because you got the itch. This is the Bite Me Podcast. I'm John Lopez. Captain Scott Knoll, the legendary one, I like to tell him that just to feed his ego a little bit, is across from me. And legendary in his own way, of course, is Captain Caleb McCumber. He's across from me as well. Got a good guest today, speaking of New Orleans and Louisiana. We'll be joined here in just a bit by Chad Battles, who's going to be a wealth of information for all of us about Louisiana. The topic is let's check on Louisiana. And we got the right guy for that. Other things we're going to hit today are the Texas trout slot change proposals. I know we're all going to have an opinion on that and how it might affect things, might not affect things. It's bird season. We saw some on Saturday when I was down on the water. That was a lot of fun. Chasing birds the right way. There are tactics and strategies and ways to do it. Got a good question from one of our listeners on the Bite Me group page on Facebook. And it's a good spot for me to say, go to Facebook and search Bite Me Fishing or Bite Me Podcast, and you'll find the group page. That's the best way to get a hold of us and ask those questions. And your topic probably will end up right here, unless we just don't like it. But we usually like most of them. We'll get into some other, you know, basic stuff on oyster reefs and some of the problems, or are they, that we're seeing up and down the Gulf Coast. I mentioned, you know, the little old 6-hour drive there, Scott. I know you've got probably a million of these stories, but try to funnel it down. I'll tell one more story because it got me to thinking. I'm going to ask the boys about this when we record this podcast for Wednesday. The dumbest / greatest / why did I do it length that you've gone just to go fishing. The other story that I was thinking about when I was driving from New Orleans was, so this was decades ago. I was still a student at Texas A&M, and I was just sitting in my trailer. Some of us couldn't afford dorm rooms and apartments. I was sitting in my trailer, and a couple of buddies were there, and I'm like, man, I really want to go fishing. Man, I really want to go fishing. Okay, class is not till Monday. It's Saturday. We could fish all day tomorrow, come back, sleep a couple hours, and go to class. So around about 10 p.m. somewhere along those lines, and there might have been some chemicals involved, I'm not sure, but we just loaded up my little Datsun truck, drove to Port Aransas, where I was most familiar with at that time from College Station, and slept, got to Port Aransas probably 3 or 4 in the morning, slept for about an hour or two, and then we went wade fishing. And the reason I remember that is because I was so determined. I had the itch. I had to go fishing. But we didn't catch a dang thing that day. So, Scott, I know you've got one of those stories, maybe even a little bit dumber than the one I just said.
Man, I've taken off in the middle of the night. I don't know how many times to take off and go fish. I used to work 7 at night till 3 in the morning on the police department. And I'd pull my boat up to the station and gather some guys up, and we'd take off as soon as we got off at 3 o'clock, head down there, fish until noon, come back to my place, everybody crash out on the floor, and then go right back to work at 7 again. And do that like day after day after day. But of course, we were a lot younger then. More recent, I guess, is all the trips I made to Florida, just taking off. Dean and I were supposed to go at one point, and we had it all planned out. We were going to leave at like 6 in the morning, start driving. It's a 12-hour drive, and everything's all settled. And there's this thing, a tropical deal that came across Cuba. Mm-hmm. And it was south of Cuba, and then all of a sudden it took a right turn and was headed right up to Mississippi. And we're looking at it, and we're trying to figure out, okay, well, we got time. If we leave earlier, mm-hmm. we can get past it. So we bail out at 2 in the morning and hook them on over there, and we're driving across that big bridge at Pensacola, mm-hmm. and it turned into a hurricane instead of a tropical storm. And we were on the bridge when we got hit with a hurricane.
Well, that's fun.
And, we timed it just right. I mean, perfect timing.
That takes a lot of work.
Right on I-10 and connected with a hurricane. Mm-hmm. Managed to drive through it with kayak strapped to the roof and all that, and truck changing lanes on me about, every couple of minutes. I'd get on the far right side and I'd be on the far left next thing I knew. We got through that and made it over to St. Petersburg. That was in the 05 when we had all those hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
We no sooner got there, we were pre-fishing, and here comes another hurricane. Comes right on up, and they call off the tournament. So we bail out of there. We get stuck in traffic, drive all the way back to Texas, and another hurricane is coming in and hitting between Houston and Corpus. It was like we were a magnet, man.
Yeah, yeah, you were the
but
hurricane.
We got to fish, magnet. And I caught my biggest snook ever on that trip.
There you go. It's worth it. Now keep in mind, before it gets Caleb, we don't recommend these things. This is a true. Don't try this at home, kids, because some of leaving at 10 in the, at night, driving to Corpus Christi all night, or going driving through three hurricanes, not recommended all the time. But we got the itch. I'll be interested to see on the Facebook group page, if you want to drop some comments or posts, the craziest / dumbest thing you've ever done, just because you had the itch to go fishing. But Caleb, boy, I mean, were you able to funnel it down to just one story that stands out?
Well, I'm not quite old enough to have the stories that Scott has, but I did. Mine are more along the lines of I've gotten on airplanes multiple times and went to other countries and other oceans to catch specific things and convinced the wife that this was a vacation. And when she gets there and realizes there's no beaches and all there is a couple of little fishing shacks and some pangas parked out front. I've been near divorce a couple of times trying to catch a rooster fish, and I still haven't gotten a good one.
Oh, you haven't got, you've got one though.
Well, tail wrapped a little tiny one is the only one we've got in the boat. I've had them. We were in the Pacific and, we were throwing these topwaters, look like surfboards with hooks on the back of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there. We were in Punta Mita, which is up the shoreline from Puerto Vallarta a little bit. And we get there, and I tell the guide, I was like, look, I'm here for a rooster fish. And over there, that's like coming here and telling us that we're here for Jack Crevel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the guide says, oh, yeah, yeah. And I'd booked him for an inshore trip. And he's, oh, yeah, 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 we'll catch one on the way home. Well, on the Pacific coast, inshore is 60 miles, apparently.
Mm.
And we went out and spent, I don't know, 5-6 hours. We caught cool stuff out there. That if you've never been fishing in the Pacific, you'll just be driving and there's a top of a mountain sticking out of the water for no particular reason. And you fish around that. We caught some cool stuff. And on the way back in, we stopped to, quote, catch one on the way back in. And I kept him out there for another 6 hours. And I'm throwing the great big, like, 8-inch long chuggers and all this stuff. And it's not going well. I'm finally get this little surfboard thing look out, and I'm reeling it as fast as you just throw a thing out and just burn it back in. And man, here it came. There was a big rooster, the feathers sticking up, and there he's on his tail. And man, everybody in the boat, just my wife is ecstatic because she might get to go home at some point. I'm ecstatic because here's my rooster fish. The guy's happy. And right before that rooster fish hit that surfboard, a Jack Crevel T-boned him and took it. And that's as close as I've been to a good rooster fish. And now travel is a bit more difficult. So I might just have to, watch other people catch them on YouTube at this point.
Oh my gosh. All right, guys, I do want to also remind you to subscribe to the podcast. And you can do that anywhere you get a podcast, from iTunes to Spotify to Google Podcasts and everywhere else in between. Let's get to our guest, because I think it will tie in somewhat with Caleb's trip to Louisiana. Chat Battles, we're happy to have you here. You are a fisherman in every sense of the word. You don't guide, you just fish. That's your words, not mine. How many tournaments have you done? But before we get to that, I'm sure you met Caleb under some rather interesting circumstances. He told us the story a couple of weeks back. What was your recollection?
Oh, man, it was tough. I thought I had a solid game plan to have a shot at winning. Day one, panning that out, you know, we were sitting in second by, I think, 0.12 of 100 out of a pound. I mean, like, we were right there. You know, we had, I think we had, like, big fish of the tournament. I mean, we had a 9-6-6 slot. I mean, so we had good fish, but the problem that came up for that tournament was this northern blew in, and like it blew out like 4 feet of water in 36 hours. And I'll be honest, every area that I had was just bone dry. And if it wasn't bone dry, it was so shallow where you couldn't fish and it was dirty. So, you know, we tried to change it up. We tried to just grind away and I think we needed 1 7-pounder and we would have made the cut. And it just didn't come through. I mean, we had the wrong game plan, and we didn't make it. And it was pretty bad. I've talked to a bunch of people, and they've said that they've never seen the waterfall that much that fast.
Yeah, tell Caleb about it.
It sure seemed a lot faster than 36 hours to me.
It was just crazy, and I mean. When that water started fall, I went into this tournament and I knew the water was going to fall. So in all of my scouting and all of the areas, every time I would find fish and I'd be in there, I'm like, all right, I'd ask myself, what happens when the water starts falling? If this water falls 2.5 feet, I can survive. Mm-hmm. You know, I was planning on that because I knew as soon as the water fell that it would eventually start coming back up.
Right.
It was just that north wind was going to blow everything out. And I tell you, it too much, too fast. And it, you know, we didn't recover. I didn't recover from it. And that's the way it goes, you know.
Listen, go ahead, Caleb.
Well, that happened to a bunch of us. I was doing the same thing. I was in marsh. Chad and I have talked. He knows where I was at. I was in marsh that was 3.5 to, you know, even some spots 4 foot deep in the ponds. And I was counting on a 2.5 wet as well. And a 2.5 would have played right into my hand. A 2.5 would have consolidated a bunch of fish all in the same spot. And a lot of the field was counting on that. You know, whenever I told y'all the other day that the locals had never seen that happen. And I want to point out that Chad's from over there in that area, you know, and nobody has seen that happen before. I was with Chad, expecting 2.5 feet to fall out of that marsh and really. That honestly, I told Daniel when that 2 feet falls, that this is when the new guys come in and make a name for themselves. And we made a name for ourselves, but it wasn't in the way we were looking for.
for those who didn't listen to the podcast when we were talking about the tournament experience at the Redfish World Series, first of all, shame on you. You can go back and listen to all of them. But yeah, Caleb had a bit of a dry boat from at the bottom of the boat.
Some people call that a dry spell, Scott.
It was a dry spell.
A little dry spell.
I'm gonna kind of back away. I like to throw in my 2 cents here and there, but I'll just kind of direct here because I got three of the best red fishermen that I've ever known in front of me. So I want to bounce these topics off of you and Scott and you and Caleb. But first, where are you based out of mostly?
I live in Belchase. I live on Highway 23, which is basically I can go to Delacroix, I can go to Venice, and I can be in Houma all within the same amount of time. I'm like dead in the middle of it all. My home water I consider Delacroix. So yeah. That's where I spend most of my time. Venice is a close second. I like it, but Venice is a little different. Venice is real conditional. It's controlled by the river, and when the river's high, it can really wreak havoc on catching fish in Venice. And with back with this World Series, one thing with the Falling Water that a lot of people missed, and I'm one of them, is it's not just that the water fell. It's the velocity at which the water fell. So in a normal time, you know, we would have, at this point, we would have like a 1.5 foot tide. All right. And it would go down, it would fall all day long. And then, you know, 6 in the evening, it would start to come back up, and that's normal. And the water is fine with that velocity, with that flow of rising and falling. But this created a really, really significant flow. So not only did it fall, but it fell at such a rate that when the water fell off the flats, it pulled mud.
Yeah.
It pulled all the mud. So usually you just have a little stained edge where it's kind of dirty, but you still have clean water. Now, everything, everywhere was dirty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that really negated the guys that had the sight fishing advantage, because I'm real big on sight fishing. And what wound up happening with the Redfish World Series was all the guys that fell into the deep channels with the current, you know, because being fallen, all that current and river water flow actually kept things stable. And even though the fish were in the deeper water, the current, those fish were hardier. And that's what ultimately led to, you know, a lot of the guys in the top 10 and on the final day, the top five, being able to capitalize, is that they were in deeper channels. Even though it was dirtier year round.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and Scott, you know, that's something that you've talked about in the past as well. You know, when the conditions change, you know, you change your game plan. Caleb's talked about it. I've talked about it. But dirty water redfish, your whole strategy, you pole, you know, your sight casting, Caleb's sight cast, Chad sight cast, you just have to completely change, you know, your entire line of thinking.
Yeah, I'll tend to go with something that makes noise. You know, spinner baits are top waters. Sometimes the top water will work, you know, a good noisy top water and really bang it. But most of the time, whenever I run into that really dirty water, I just switch over to spinner baits and make some noise with that.
The big spinner baits is what we're talking about, with the big, you know, flower on it, so to speak, and the big blade on it, so to speak.
Chad, before I get spinner bait with paddle tails. Put a paddle tail on it. Yeah, as big a paddle tail as you can get. And,
yeah, yeah. Chad, before I get, you know, Caleb's thoughts on this, you know, you are one of these guys that is much into the science of fishing. You know, what is going on there? Not this particular event, but, you know, for you, from your perspective, how do you change your strategy? What is going on that makes you want to all of a sudden realize that there's some fish in that dirty water, in that deeper water? I'm guessing they were deeper as well.
Well, I think what happened is it wasn't so much, it was an area. So the people who, the guys that were in river current, that is where a lot of the fish were able to be caught, because they were already accustomed to the dirtier water, the dirtier flow, and they were falling right in the channel. Then there was another area in Hopedale, Biloxi Marsh type area, where it was deeper and the water stayed clear. Where even though it was falling, the water stayed clean. What got me in and what ultimately got Caleb is that we were in areas that had really big fish. But when the water fell and everything got dirty, those particular fish were almost rendered uncatchable, because the water was so shallow and so dirty that you could see them. You knew where they were at, but it was, you could throw a spinnerbait, and don't get me wrong, they'll eat the spinnerbait, but because the conditions were happening so fast and we were dealing with gusts of the north wind, like over 35 miles an hour, it just rendered everything. I think the fish just shut down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you could see them, you could be there, but they would not eat for anything. And then half the time we were just dragging the boat.
Yeah, there's a time whenever there's a big, they kind of go into a shock pattern like that. I see it after cold fronts. I see it after, you know, big dumps where you can find them the day after, but they're still kind of in shock. They're not really wanting it. But then you, the next day you can go back and usually, you know, catch them and make it work. I had spinner baits on the boat, which y'all all know that I use a lot, but I went to Academy and bought those like $16 jackhammer chatter baits. Mm-hmm. With some big plastics to put on them to try to counter as much noise. You know, when the wind's blowing, it's putting noise in that water. That's why I don't like to throw a top water when it's real quiet, unless it's a quiet top water. And if it's windy, I'm going to throw a louder one. And so that's exactly what we did, was go buy, you know, the clankiest, you know, get their attention stuff. But like Chad was saying, right after a big rip like that, the next day is usually pretty stinking tough until those fish stabilize and get their wits about them and they leave survival mode and get back into eating mode, you know?
Well, Chad, you know, one thing we do on this podcast and you've listened to it is, all right, now regular fishermen, you know, not in a tournament, when they see these conditions on a given day outside of bailing, you know, what are some of the things that you're looking for? And let's not talk about, like I said, this particular event, but just a tide blowing out, water dirtying up, fish moving, maybe getting lockjaw a little bit. You know, what are you telling like our listeners? All right, this should be the plan B. This should be the plan C.
You know, if you're fishing something where the water's falling in a fall situation, you need to be somewhere in the best conditioned water, where it's the cleanest water in an area, but also the most stable water. And you know, if you're fishing an area that has creeks or whatever, or little trenasses and ponds, you need to be sitting somewhere on the outside waiting for them to swim out. Because when that water starts falling out, them fish are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a lot of times I like to try to intersect them on big water. They're coming from the little water to the big water or the deep channels. And I just like to just sit there and wait for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it don't always work out, but when it does, it's worth it.
And Scott, that's perfect because, you know, we talk about you fished all over the Gulf Coast. And the way I got into this, I want to get you and Caleb and then I'll get to Chad again. The differences between Louisiana and actually where he is right now down on the lower coast, that's something that might be unique to that because we don't have the deep, deep, you know, bay systems everywhere on this Gulf Coast. So, you know, how would you interpret, you know, Louisiana, those conditions versus, you know, lower coast, mid coast, those conditions where the wind and the water change?
If it's going to fall out that much, say Galveston, you're going to fall back. I always fish green so much. First fallback is into the bigger lakes. And then if you had to fall any more than that, there's some deep cuts between the lakes where all those drains go out. They've scoured them out pretty good. And a lot of times I found those fish would get to that point and just stop. They'd stack mm-hmm. up right there. The post drop, I think it's more, instead of like they're saying, you know, survivor mode and all that, I think they eat so dead gum much on those big falling tides that they're just stuffed. Because I'd many times after a big front would blow through, it'd be calm the next day and, you know, the water's clear enough to see them. You can see fish just laying on the bottom and they're just kind of waddling. It usually would take about 24 hours before I could get them to eat again. Mm-hmm. And that's putting a fly right on their nose and just teasing them. And they might eat it. Most of the time they just turn away from it, but you could see how thick and full their bellies were. The one that really got me, you know, I don't keep that many fish, but I had a customer that did on one of those days when they finally started eating again, like a day and a half after a big drop.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut one open. I just had to check the stomach. And they were eating mullet by that point because all the shrimp had got blown out. It was like there was a divine inside of him. The backside, it looked like boiled shrimp. They were pink, you know, real mushy, and just stuffed full of these little bitty shrimp. The front half was real fresh, and it was mullet. And you could see that fish hadn't eaten in at least 24 hours. But it stuffed itself prior to that
yeah.
with all those little shrimp. It was still working on digesting all that.
I kind of ran into that. I kind of ran into that last couple of days, actually. Yesterday, it was schooling fish just all over the place with their faces buried in the mud. and everything we caught had a big old fat pot belly on it. It was, you know, they were just gorged. And then you couldn't spook them yesterday. I was pulling my boat up within 20 feet of them so that my customers, they were tripling up out of schools off of them. And then today they're doing just that. They were laying on bottom. They were way spookier than they were yesterday. They weren't in that feeding mode. They were just in that lay there, leave me alone mode. So I think Scott's dead on to something. And then, you know, what Chad was talking about is, you know, it's right along the lines of what we talk about with the eddies, where if you've got a lot of water coming out, we kind of like to fish the outside of the moving water, but near it. Chad has a lot bigger tide swings than we have over here. You know, over here, a big swing for us is a foot, where whenever I got to the World Series, it was about a 2-foot tide swing. And they're a lot quicker and a lot more violent over there. But, you know, Chad's spot on. We're not throwing in the water where it's just ripping your lure out, but fishing the edge of it where the bait's coming out of those drains, out of those cuts, and then filtering out into that calmer water. And then that's where we'll find the fish cruising at a lot of the time.
Chad, I want to get a couple more things with you that I think are important for our listeners, because we, you know, I've fished for several years in Sabine. That's about as much into Louisiana as I went. You know, I said, let's check on Louisiana. You know, for people from Florida that are listening to this podcast, from the lower and mid coast that are listening to this podcast, how would you describe fishing in Louisiana versus, you know, where the rest of us fish?
I think fishing in Louisiana is different. A lot of times these fish move slower. They're, you know, here in Port Aransas per se, Corpus, you know, these fish swim fast. Like even the floaters, if you're sight fishing, even the floaters, they're not just there floating, you know, you throw in front of them. These fish always seem to be on the go. They're going to point A to point B. They're moving. If they're getting the big schools swim like marathon runners, you know. And back home, you know, you can get a few fish in a pocket, and listen, if nobody messes with them, they'll be there a month.
Yeah,
you know, over like in Texas and Florida, I don't think that those fish are that stable as far as don't move, you know. And and then it's really just, you know, you need to find fish that are short and heavy, because you can find a ton of spots that have good fish. But if they're not the heavy fish, you know, they could be light. You could catch perfect slots, but they're 7-pounders. That ain't going to do you no good. And then with this year, with all these weather changes, every tournament had significant weather events. And it really boiled down to predicting what areas you found fish that were going to be stable,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the guys that did it the best were the ones that had success.
You know, Caleb talked about the big tide swings in Louisiana versus here. What is the, because I know you're kind of a nerd into the science of fishing and the behaviors of fish. For our listeners, you know, why is that? What would be the, is it the rivers? What is it with the tide swings and what people can be looking for there?
Here's the deal. The tide swings aren't always that significant. I mean, the most we'll get is like a foot and a half. But the reason it's important is because we have a lot of ponds and we have a lot of flats. So let's say you're fishing an area and we like to fish shallow, because, you know, you get in the shallows, you can sight fish real well. You know, we got shallow boats that can make it and you can trawl or whatever. But the reason it's so important is because if you're fishing a falling tide, all right, and you're fishing in the morning per se, and in the morning, the tide's just starting to fall. If you're fishing at 9 in the morning, the tide starts falling at 8, you know, for that first couple hours, you're good. But then as the day goes on, if you got like a foot and a half tide swing, you could actually lose the water. You won't be able to fish that flat effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But then what winds up happening is, let's say you're one particular area that you're fishing, and let's say it's a west wind. If that area is affected by the west wind on a falling tide, guess what? That falling tide might be double,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've made mistakes before where I didn't account for the tide and the wind.
Right.
And next thing you know, it's just, you know, by the time you're fishing a tournament situation, it's too late. You done missed it and you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. One more thing. And then I'm going to get Scott and Caleb's reaction and we'll move on to some other topics, but we're glad you're here. This is just me being curious, because a lot of my buddies down here, often wonder about the limits and the limit sizes, slot sizes, and the sizes of in Louisiana. And it is, you know, paradise, as they say, for outdoorsmen. But what do Louisiana folks generally think about the smaller sizes, the smaller slots, and the numbers in Louisiana?
You know, a lot of the tournament fishermen are aware of it, but I just think that, you know, we have a lot of recreational anglers and guides. And look, if it, you know, if it gets caught, it usually gets eaten, you know.
A different mindset. You know,
everybody's,
yeah. What are the
everybody's
the
got an opinion.
Right, is it still 12?
I want to say for trout, it's 25 trout per person, 12 inches. Redfish, you can have 4 under 27 and 1 over per day.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I know me personally.
Is it as polarizing as it is for others? Or are they just like, let's do it, man, because they got a bunch anyway?
Are they really into conservation over there, Chad? Are there people that get mad that you can keep that many, or that's just how it is? There's plenty for everyone.
There's guys that get highly pissed off. And then there's guys like me that's like, look, I don't care. You do what you do.
Yeah.
Because the reality of it is, I don't care how many fish you catch. I still got to go out and do what I do. You know, yeah. A lot of guys will get all twisted up in their head and they start getting all mental about it and getting pissed off. But the reality of the situation is this. Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to win an event. And if I'm not fishing an event, the reality of it is there's fish somewhere.
Yeah.
And I've actually got to the point where I include in my tournaments in scouting strategy, does this area get hit by the guides a lot?
Yeah.
Because I'll just avoid it, you know, and not anything knocking the guides. The guides are out there making a living, feeding their families. Listen, they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, any guide that I know would love to have a 3 trout limit and a 3 redfish limit. You know how easy it would make their life?
Yeah.
Like they'd be done in an hour. Mm-hmm. But since it isn't, I just, you know, I don't get into it because I know that we have management issues at the top levels of the people that control the natural resources. And they're not taking the initiative to fix things. Whereas like with Texas, as soon as y'all had that freeze, within a week, limits were changed like instantly.
Yeah.
And that's why you guys can come out here and catch an 8-9 pound trout and a bunch of big reds, but you're not going to catch anything over 15 inches in Louisiana trout wise.
That's when we were working some of those ponds, I think Daniel caught like a 16 and a half and we were both going on about, man, that's a absolute monster. I do wish.
I mean, that's like a donkey in Louisiana. That's like, what?
I do wish that they would up the slot limit in Louisiana to 20 and a guy that's really big into sight casting. I can gauge length and weight by looking at them in the water. And that inch throws me off in a serious way. Fortunately, I got over it while we were practicing, but if I'd have went over there any sooner for tournament day, I'd have been throwing it at 28s all day long. It took me a minute to adjust to that. And then like Chad was saying, you know, the guys are just doing their job. And, you know, we've talked about the limits over here multiple times and how upset all the guys got when they dropped the limits. And like Chad said, your job just got easier, bud.
Yeah.
I really haven't heard any pushback on the three trout limit. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a little bit. Scott, I know you're like me because you and I are in the same boat, so to speak, on this. What he just said, you know, I'm kind of giggling over here because, you know, it's just amazing that's still going on right now. But the reality is, Scott, the fishery, even though they have a lot of fish, a lot of marsh in Louisiana, it is being affected. If a 16 and a half inch trout is considered a donkey, that's affecting the fishery. So all our listeners in Louisiana, you know, just a tweak, a small tweak, do it incrementally like we did here in Texas, you're going to be catching 25 inch trout, right?
I mean, they've got the territory to do it. I mean, they've got all the food, you know, all that marsh area. I mean, it's so alive. That's one of the things I love about being over there. There's so much going on all the time. But once a fish gets to that 12-inch mark, he's got a target on his back. I fished over there many, many times, especially when I was repping. Yeah, I had guides that, you know, were on my pro staff, and I'd go over and fish with them. And they'd be tossing these 12.5-inch fish in the cooler just quick as they catch them. And they would look at me funny when I'd be throwing them back.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Why are you throwing that back? Well, I just don't think I'm going to keep one that, that hadn't seen his first birthday yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had
kind of hard for me to do that.
I had a topic here that I bet I can get Chad fluffed up about a little bit, though.
Heck yeah.
Forget about the keeping the small trout. Forget about the keeping 5 redfish a day in Louisiana. And one of my new friends does it. In Louisiana, they will shoot a redfish in the face with an arrow, and I cannot wrap my head around it. I've been invited to do it multiple times. I'm like, look, I'll go. I'll shoot a sheephead. You know, sheepheads.
Hard heads.
I cannot make myself shoot a redfish in the face with an arrow. I just can't do it.
It's I'll tell you, man. It's another issue that makes tournament fishing harder. But the reality of it is no matter how many guides are out there, no matter the limits, no matter how many guys get shot, you know, do the bow fishing, you know, these tournaments in Louisiana keep getting won on big fish all the time.
Oh yeah.
No, they're good. I'm just
saying. So we're just fortunate. I personally don't agree with it. I think that's kind of, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But because, you know, and even, you know, you're not supposed to shoot a sport fish, but for some reason you can shoot a redfish with a bow and arrow, but you can't shoot a bass.
No, you can't. No, you can't. At least
shoot the 5-pounder fish. Shoot the 5-pounder. Come on, man. Leave the 9 alone, bud.
Man, I've seen dudes bow fish during the day. I've been in a pond in a tournament. Look over during a tournament during the day, had a dude bow fishing. You know, I've seen redfish swimming around a boat with an arrow in his head. Freaking nuts, dude. I've caught redfish with holes in them, with holes in their bodies. I'm like, what the hell? I mean, it's crazy.
I've caught
it's
fish.
Crazy.
With,
I'm gonna tell you this, but I will avoid areas with bow fishermen like the plague.
I'm sure because
I'm
will.
Telling you, when you get. You can look at fish in an area. I can go and take you places, and all of a sudden, them fish start moving and they start darting. They almost act like they're in Texas, but they're in Louisiana. That's how you know they both fish. You better get your ass out of there.
It's serpentine pattern.
Heartbreak.
Yeah, serpentine pattern, man.
They don't swim straight.
When they start pinballing, all around, and they're just moving and look like little darts, you better leave because you ain't catching nothing. I don't care how many is there.
You can have
1,000 and you ain't catching none.
I'm not saying they're a little skittish, but I think they're a little skittish if they got a hole.
I think
hole
they're
in
a
them.
Little skittish. Hey, I mean, they start crashing into the boat. It's like, you're done. You're done.
Let's rewind and analyze what the man just said, though. He compared Texas redfish to redfish that are getting shot in the face in Louisiana. And that is why I am going to go to Louisiana every chance I get, because, yes, they are high speed over here versus over there.
Hey, one more thing before we let you go, Chad, because I was just thinking about this. First time I moved my boat down to Sabine, you know, I was fishing with a guy from Louisiana. And he says, well, you know, we fished a little bit. He goes, well, let's go get some potato chips. And I said, well, everything on the boat is what I got. I got some sausage. I got some, you know, pork rinds. I mean, pork rinds is the closest thing I got to a potato chip. He goes, no, man, let's go get some flounder. The flounder they catch. In that he called them potato chips. The flounder, the limit 10 inches?
I don't even know, because we don't have enough flounder where I live to even know what the limit is.
He called them
like
potato
I ain't caught
chips.
A flounder in 4 years.
You and Caleb. You and Caleb.
I sight casted for a week, and I think I saw 4 small ones all week, and I was in clear water, and I saw 4.
Yeah, where you was at is where we would have flounder, but they're not there.
Yeah. Hey, man, Chad, we're going to continue with the podcast, but good stuff. We'll get you back on, you know, anytime.
Yeah, man, whenever.
And we'll get it done. What's your tournament schedule? Is it winding down right now like Caleb's? Or are you,
oh, you're we're done. We're done. We're done for the year.
How many did you do?
I think I did 12.
Oh, man, you won hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did win. I did win the Elite Series. They did the Contender Series for the EFL. I did win that one man in Delacro.
Not a bad.
And then finished up an Elite Series out of Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. Wound up finishing second after finished second by 1/100th after a 3/4-pound penalty for a dead fish. So you can tell I was thrilled on that one. I was thrilled on that one.
You know, and that tournament that Chad won in Delacro, that wasn't an easy one. I was at Chad. I didn't tell you this. I was down there, Chad. I went down there.
Oh, really?
And, I went down there. That was when COVID was about to kick off, I think. We went to get down there to get the rest of our stuff and bring it home. I filmed some YouTube down there, and Chuck McKinney and I were in close proximity to each other. And he asked me, "Are you going to fish it?" I said, "Man, I've been running on this marsh for 4 days. There's zero chance I'm putting up any money. I'm going home, sir."
Yeah. I knew that I was going to win that. I knew that I was beating the brakes off everybody in that tournament. I knew it, dude. It was my time. You know, that's my home water. And I tell you, I had that tournament done by 10. I had two nines. I caught two nines off the bat, like boom, boom, two nines. They were like not even close. Then I finished up with a 25-inch 8-pounder and just went to the dock. And I'm not bragging because it was a special day. But when you know, you know. And I just – that was it, you know. It was good. It was what I really wanted to accomplish. And it was so important to me because, you know, we fish team events. And every time there's somebody in a team event, well, you know, he fished with this one or he fished with that one. Nah. This was mano a mano. Everybody had to do everything. And you know, I felt that it was, you know, it let people know I'm a serious contender and I'm here to fish and compete, you know.
Well, good deal.
It was my backyard, so it was cool.
That's a good way to do it. All right, man, we'll talk to you next time. We're going to let you go. We'll finish up. We're going to finish up the podcast.
All right, y'all. Here. It was a pleasure, man. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
All right.
Thanks, Chad.
See you later, man.
All right, Scott. Man, where do we begin? Where do we begin with this? Because
let's circle back to shooting redfish in the face with a bow.
That's exactly right.
You know what else they do over there that I just can't wrap my brain around?
There's a family-friendly channel.
For tarpon.
Oh.
They what?
They spearfish for tarpon.
Get out of town.
There's a tournament where they spearfish for tarpon.
How is my question?
I don't know.
Who holds onto the spear is what we're asking.
Exactly.
It's the craziest thing. I mean, it's a different country over there.
Different world.
Yeah, you cross that border, you're in another country.
But gosh dog, it's nice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. It's great. You know, the other thing that I think is a perfect tie-in is we're getting, you know, some other slot change proposals coming right now in the next few weeks. I know you guys saw the story and the stories. I want to start with Scott on that because I guess you probably have it in front of you, but limits down to 3. I'm guessing all the way up to about where I put in pretty much in the East Matagorda area. I think it's probably, you know, a high time that it does happen post freeze. What are your thoughts, Scott?
If you listen to this podcast, you know my thoughts on it. It's overdue. Yeah, the middle coast should have been included with the lower coast on the emergency regulations. I just want to see the fishing improve. I don't want to see us just muddle along and, you know, maintain and slowly go down like we have over the last 25, 30 years I've been watching it.
Yeah.
A lot of young guys pop in, you know, on those posts and, oh man, fishing's as good as it's ever been. It's great. No, it's not. I mean, not when we used to be able to walk out into the surf with a mirror lure and, I mean, we catch 40, 50, 60 trout, no problem. Go into the back lakes, go fish a deep reef or Hannah's or any place like that and just really just hit a lot of fish. There are 4, 5, 6 pounders. It wasn't that unusual. So it's hard for me to buy into the it's as good as it's ever been. It's just not.
Yeah. And Caleb, I'm going to be completely honest. I think I told you this before. You know, when I was, as I mentioned just a second ago, fishing in Sabine, and then the limits went down to 5 trout, in Middle Coast, East Matagorda Bay, down all the way down to the lower coast. That's one of the biggest reasons I went there. I think it's desirable to have the smaller limits on trout, especially just because the fish get bigger. As you guys know, if you listen to the podcast, as Scott just said, I like everything, but nothing gets me going like catching a big trout. And I visited there a couple of times, just dragged my boat down there back because I knew East Matagorda Bay pretty well anyway from all the years that I've been going on down there. And I'm like, I think my first day there, I caught 2 24s and a 26. I'm like, this thing works. I mean, it absolutely works. You were there fishing, Caleb, you know, with the 10 trout limit to the 5 trout limit. I mean, what did you see just in terms of the fishery and the size?
Yeah, to reiterate your point, I had customers on the boat yesterday and they caught a couple of fish and said, this is what they were talking about those East Matagorda fish. These people, they were from like Seadrift, Port O'Connor area. And it was blowing their mind that we were easily catching, you know, two pounders. Mm-hmm. I was here during the 10 fish limit and I saw the decline. You know, when I first started fishing Matagorda back in the early 2000s, I could walk into one cove and come out the other side with I caught a bunch of fish. And then it just continually got worse and worse and worse and worse. And at that point, that's whenever I was going down to Baffin and, you know, they had the big fish down there. But where we're at now, after the 5 fish limit, I will argue that Matagorda, pound for pound is a better fishery than Baffin is anymore. The difference is Baffin has a lot more structure and a lot more things that are going to hold those fish and congregate them. Where in Matagorda, you got to really understand the patterns and you really need some luck on your side. But Matagorda has turned around significantly with the 5 fish. Then we had the freeze, which, you know, hurt us this summer. Pat and I, we've been with each other for the past 5 days. We've both been guiding down there and we were sitting around and talking about how dismal this summer was as a whole. There was flashes in the pan, but it just wasn't what it usually is down there. And so I will say that what I've seen over the past 5 days has been a real relief in that I am 100% convinced that hurricane has bounced us back dramatically. Mm-hmm. And what convinces me of that is Pat's been catching a bunch of big fish this week. I've been on a different pattern. I've been catching the fish out of the boat that are medium sized, but I've caught a bunch of really small trout too, like, you know, 10, 12 inches, caught a lot of 15s to 20s, then Pat's been to the 20 to 30 range. And just see those fish come in where they had been fairly void all summer. But what's really got me convinced that the hurricane did it is you can go on Facebook at any given time and look at East Matagorda guides, and they're showing pictures of their trout bit in half by sharks, mm-hmm. which that is typically a rarity in East Bay. So if there's a bunch of sharks there, then I would say that hurricane pushed in the sharks and the trout together. But I'm totally for the 3 fish limit. You know, that's just how I am, duh, right?
Right.
But I'm for it. I think it's going to help. I wish Chad said something that made me grit my teeth earlier, talking about how quickly Texas Parks and Wildlife had responded. And they did pretty well south of JFK, but they didn't do anything at all for us.
Yeah.
And I also think that if they're going to do that, if they're going to put that in place, that they need to be a little bit proactive on the redfish side, because I see a lot of guys, they're going to go out and catch their trout and then go after the redfish. And the redfish got hurt pretty good this spring.
What would you like to see?
I don't know. I mean, just make it 2 or something, you know, just pump the brakes on it a little bit. You know, I'm sorry, you know, there's some people that are upset with me for the things that I have to say, but 4 people and 12 redfish, that is more fish than you can eat. Now, there's outliers out there. I promise there's outliers that are going to go home. They're going to vacuum seal some of it. And over the next 30 days, they're going to eat it all. I get it. There's those people out there. But, you know, quick story yesterday, my customers, we kept 2 trout. I think 3 trout, they hooked a couple of deep. So we threw those in the box and one of the guys wanted to take a redfish home. I don't have a problem with it. I cleaned a 24 inch redfish yesterday and 3 trout. And the guys were questioning me at the table. They're, hey, you know, why, why do you hate keeping fish so much? And it's not that I do. It's that Scott and I have both sat around and brought in fish for everybody. And at the end of the day, none of the customers even wanted them. They tried to give them to us. And, you know, we don't want to. I like catfish bites from HEB, honestly.
There you go. Scott, I think a really good question for you, kind of an offshoot of this, is what is it? What can we expect, and when can we expect it? If it goes, and I'm expecting it to at least, you know, happen. They said until what, 2023, 2024, something like that. For those who don't know, I didn't even say this. They're proposing to reduce the bag limit from 5 to 3 trout and modify the slot. And I want to get your thoughts on this as well, Scott, from 15 to 25 inches to 17 to 23 inches, which I love those numbers. And I want to get your thoughts. I have my own. And you can keep one fish over 25. So you can't keep a fish between 23 and above except for one over 25. And the slot is 17 to 23. But what can we expect? How soon can we expect it? And your thoughts on those slots?
They put out a bunch of graphs that showed if we do this limit, we can expect to see this much recruitment. If we do a different limit, you know, I've seen a lot of people saying, well, why are you keeping the 17 to 23s? Those are, you know, the best breeders. Well, it gives those younger trout, which there's more of, two chances to breed, you know, two seasons to breed before they're, mm-hmm. they're 17 inches and they're old enough, you know, where they go in a cooler. I'm going to have to trust a biologist on that. You know, as far as they say that that is the quickest way to rebound from where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
I had that same thought of, man, I don't know about keeping the 17 to 23s. Why not make it 15 to 21? You know, but according to them, that the biomass of trout in that smaller range that can go ahead and breed 2 or 3 times before they're caught and kept makes up for the keeping of those mid-sized fish.
Right.
Protecting the big ones, I'm always for that. I've been for that all along. I'd kind of like to see that go to a tag like the redfish.
Right. Right.
When it comes back, later on, when they start allowing the one over 25 again, make it a tag. And I've known way too many people that target and want to go catch that one over 25 to add it to their bag because it's more fillets.
Mm-hmm.
And that was put in place so that you could keep a big fish if you, you know, cut, you know, if you hooked it deep, like Caleb was talking about from yesterday, you could still keep one. You could also keep a state record, you know, if you were so lucky to get one. So by having a tag, you could still do that.
Right.
But you would be limited in how many you can do in a year. Instead of the guys going out trying to get that one over 25 every day or every weekend, going and hitting it twice on a weekend, I just think it would improve our big trout numbers significantly if we could do that.
The reason that I like, Caleb, I want to get your thoughts on this, the 17 to 23 is, and maybe this is silly, but whenever I catch fish that are over 23 inches long, you know, catch that, you know, you get in that pocket. And as I've mentioned, I've never really seen those fish school, but they kind of are in the same neighborhood of each other. You know, if you catch one 24, 25, 26 inch trout, there's going to be more, maybe not like right there, but kind of in that area, in that vicinity. They're not a pack school, but they kind of congregate. So my thing is 17 to 23, I love. Because I can think of a couple of occasions right now off the top of my head where I had that day, you know, that unforgettable day where I caught a 26, and then I caught a 28, and then I caught a 27. Now, it took 2-3 hours, but they were all right there. So my thing is 17 to 23, those are still kind of school fish. There's a lot of them. They can mate, they can spawn, whatever. Whereas I don't want anyone taking more than, you know, I don't want you to have to be able to take 5 fish 23 and 24 inches long because they kind of congregate together. That's a lot.
Yeah, when you get on that school of the 23 to 25 inches, you can certainly take home 5 24 inch fish pretty easily, and the one over, like Scott was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm with Scott. I'm not much of a scientist on this particular matter. If they say that's what it's going to take to do it, then great. I wish they would have said it a long time ago. That's, you know, that's really all I can add to it. The report that came out said 100 trout died in that freeze. You know, me and Scott raised quite a bit of a commotion about it.
I saw more than 100 myself.
Yeah, a lot of people thumbed their nose at us and said, "Oh, hey, look at this report."
I saw them. Trust me. Yeah. I saw them.
Oh, I posted the video and got the whole coast up in arms over it, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, at least they're making a move now. I'll go back to February. Scott or I once said it that they are reactive a lot more than they are proactive. So, but at least we're reacting to some extent at the moment. We'll see what it does. Like I said, I've seen promising things out there. I'm very happy to see it. One thing that we heard a lot was Mother Nature always takes care of herself, and I'll be darned if a hurricane doesn't come through and raise the water level up and put fish back in our bay without tearing all of our houses down. So,
I love your theory there. I when you were talking, I was like, I hadn't even thought of that, but I've had some, you know, relatively good experiences here lately on the water. That might just be it. I mean, Scott, what are your thoughts on that? Just like everything, including big fish blowing in, more trout, maybe the what do they call them, Gulf runners or surf runners or whatever. Are those getting into? Do you think those are getting into the bays as well?
It could be. I mean, without genetic testing, it's hard to say, you know, where they came from, what they're doing. I've read some reports and some studies that typically those tide runner fish stay in they're born out there. They live out in the surf. That's, you know, they just don't necessarily come and go. They do, you know, around the passes, you know, within a few miles of the passes. Mm-hmm. But I said Mother Nature's a weird thing, and there's a void, and Mother Nature fills a void. So there's a void of trout, and maybe that's why they came on in.
But this is a totally different dynamic, because I know that Dr. McKee has said that they come in, and Dacus has said that they stay, or not Dacus, I can't come with the Stuns has said they stay out. But, you know, this isn't just coming in and out of passes. This is this is a 5 or 6 foot tide surge. And I wouldn't be as prescribed to the theory if all those sharks hadn't showed up in East Bay. That's what really kind of tops it off for me.
Here's the other thing, Caleb, just my observation now that I'm, you know, you got me thinking about this, and I think there's a lot to that. The water on from East Matagorda Bay down to wherever the hurricane, really Port O'Connor, so on some of those not peninsulas, but the thin areas of the surf, the water was over, you know, the beach. And so the water was basically going from the surf to the bay, you know, unobstructed.
Yeah, the north shoreline of Gulf of Mexico was the north shoreline of East Matagorda Bay.
Right.
I mean, you put 2 foot on top of it, that's more than enough to roll fish in. The only thing I don't know if those fish that live relatively near shore, if they sense that storm coming and boogie out to deep water to get away from it. I don't know about that. Like I said, the shark, that's what really has my attention, is all those sharks showing up. That's different. And you saw me fishing yesterday. I studied that shoreline pretty good, and I can see the new stuff, the new cuts, the new, you know, how much water came through there during that storm.
I will say it was cool because, you know, we have so many listeners here on the Buy Me podcast. But it was really cool to see that nice couple that you had when I went and met you. I wasn't even passing judgment. I expect people to keep a couple fish here and there, you know, but I went up and met you guys and you know, we had a nice conversation, and I just said, "Hey, you guys keeping any fish?" And I wasn't trying to, like, you know, shame anybody, because I keep fish occasionally. You do. Scott does occasionally. I was just curious, you know, you're going to keep a red, you're going to keep a couple of trout. And they're like, "Oh, no. You know, we're catching and releasing everything." So people get it. And I think more and more people are starting to get it.
It's getting to where I don't even have to ask them anymore. We turned loose of a lot of fish today. Yesterday, Madison and Sean or Stefan or Steve or whatever the heck his name was. That's an inside joke there, y'all. We caught a bunch of good trout. We caught a bunch of good redfish, and it was no questions asked, put them back. It's a great thing to see. And
lots of great pictures. The pictures don't go away.
We had a heck of a good time. In fact, I've got a I've got a shirt that I think that CCTV and Bite Me might have to team up on, and I haven't got it down, but I'll go ahead and roll it out. Y'all hit us up on the Facebook page. Let us know if you'd be interested in it. All proceeds will go to Feeding Scott's Chickens. That's about how much money we make on this stuff. But I want to make a shirt that says like "Fish for Fun Again" or "Make Fishing for Fun Again" or something like that. I think it could be neat. We'll get Mike to draw up a cool logo for it and everything, and we might have to partner up on that. What do you think, John?
I totally agree. Scott, you've been talking about this for a while. Like, you know, you've been doing it how many years now, where it's just pretty much catch and release? And people are getting
pretty much since I started.
Yeah, pretty much getting trained, and it's not anything. I'm sure, Scott, if somebody said, "Hey, I'd like to keep a redfish," they're going to keep a redfish.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with it. They can keep a limit if they want to.
Yeah.
You know, I don't put a restriction on them, but the customer base that I have grown over years, they're just into catch and release. They want to be out there. There was a fellow that jumped in on one of those trout threads that it said the other day, well, with the price of gas and the price of this and the price of that, man, it's not even going to be worth it to go out and catch three trout. Well, it wasn't worth it to go catch five trout if you're going to put that price tag on it.
If you're paying, $60 a pound.
Our fish, the fish fillets are not a commodity. I mean, that's not what you're out there for. You're out there for the enjoyment. If you're going to measure it by the commodity of fish fillets in your hand, there ain't no way you could ever make that make sense. It's the same as deer hunting. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get on a big deer lease and you spend thousands of dollars and you spend all this money going back and forth. That deer meat per pound is a hell of a lot more than going to the grocery store and picking up some beef.
But
it's a bonus. You know, but the biggest part of it is the enjoyment. You get to spend time with your friends. You get to spend time out in nature.
Take those pictures. We all got the best phones on the planet in our hands, in our back pocket. I mean, I was taking videos and pictures and, you know, you're with your buddies, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, they look so much better. They're so much more resplendent, you know, their colors and such, you know, just do it like that. And speaking of our great listeners, definitely we're going to get to what would Scott do? What would Caleb do? And the chasing birds question, because this actually occurred to me the other day when I saw Caleb out on the water, but this Bite Me 20 promo is becoming just a monster, and I love it because we got friends at Deadly Dudley, which is deadlydudley.com. That's the bait that I use. That's what I caught a lot of fish on Saturday on Sunday when I drove in from New Orleans. Mike over at Knock and Tail is just knocking it out of the park at mycoastoutdoors.com with the Bite Me 20 promotion. And of course, my buddy, Tim, and my buddy Jason over at Wade Wright. This is a really cool thing, man. I mean, it's just for our listeners. We're all like-minded. We all love to fish, take the pictures, use our favorite lures. You guys got yours, Knock and Tail. That's what I was throwing, catching redfish on the shoreline Sunday afternoon before I came in. Didn't even really have to work it that hard because it has that rattle in the tail. So take advantage of this. That's 20% off, man. I mean, this is very self-serving, but these are friends of ours, and it's great baits. You like that Deadly Dudley? Go to deadlydudley.com. Use the promo code BITEME20. Try the Knock and Tail. That's one that I've been using a lot more lately. MyCoastOutdoors.com. Use the BITEME20 promo code. That's just for us here in the Bite Me community. And then, of course, the Wade Wright Bite Me Special, which is a huge package that is an incredible deal at 20% off the already discounted price. And that's the whole package. You can look on their website, Bite Me 20. You get 20% off right there. So I always encourage that every week because we get new listeners every week. And those are great baits. I mean, this is going to be a great transition into the birds, guys, because I had the electric chicken of Deadly Dudley on Sunday. I used one bait, caught probably, I don't know, 18, 20 trout, nothing enormous, but I used one bait on all those. So it's durable. Same thing with Knock and Tail. Didn't quite catch as many redfish, but that was user error. That wasn't Knock and Tail lure error because I did catch a couple on it, just kind of trolling it and reeling it and barely moving it along the grass shoreline. But Caleb, I saw you on Sunday, and I thought of this. Birds working are it's different versions of the same thing. I mean, we see birds working where there's 60 birds working a school. We see birds working where there's, you know, 4 or 5 birds working a school. We see birds that are skittish when you, even no matter how careful you are. And I actually had to be very, very careful. I got a good feel for things on Sunday. It was usually 4 or 5 birds. You couldn't, you know, not that I ever want to, but you know, you couldn't barrel up there. I started way back. I'm talking sometimes 300 yards away from them and trolled all the way in because they would just stop. They were skittish. It was different behavior than those big packs that we were accustomed to seeing. And then oftentimes, and I told you about this when I went back and caught a few more, there's just birds sitting on the water. They never work, but there's trout under them. So I thought it'd be a great discussion. I'll start with you and then get Scott, because he's got a lot of experience with this. Chasing birds the right way is the topic, but it's really understand birds work differently, correct?
Yeah, you keep up with that stop and wave before them and watch your red and black outlaw slip up in front of you there, bud. And hopefully it's me, because I feel like you'll get less mad at me, because I'm going to be way out. I'm probably going to moon you while I'm doing it.
Just barrel in front of me and then just start catch two and then move on.
That's it.
That's happened to me a few times.
Man, my typical everyday day-to-day thing is I'm going to pull in probably about 100 yards behind them, and I'm going to just start drifting towards them. I'll use my trolling motor to move me back and forth. If I have just one or two people on the boat, I'll point the boat right at them. But I do try to not get up on them too much. I want to get far out there to pick at them. They over the years, they've become where they really respond poorly to pressure. But like you were saying, today it was a lot more sitting birds.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting birds, I think, are probably the toughest for people to figure out. And that those birds are sitting because something happened there that got them in that area and made them sit down. And what I was experiencing today is I would find birds sitting and I would drift to them and drift through them. And we were picking up fish from around them. But what they do a lot of the times too, is they'll all be sitting there. And how a bird can see this from a 3-inch off the sea level visibility.
Yep.
But all of a sudden they'd all hop up and run 20 yards to their right or left and just, you know, jump all over a shrimp or something. Well, you know, that's telling me, hey, there's a group of fish there, a group of fish there. So, you don't want to run up real close to them. I've seen it a lot this weekend where people run right up within about 20 yards of them. And sure, you can pick a fish or two out of it sometimes, you know, maybe more times than not. But you're essentially, what you're doing is you're busting that school of fishes underneath them. And as soon as that school of fish quits, they're going to quit pushing the bait to the top. The birds are going to quit working. And you're running around, you know, looking for another group without a boat on them right away.
And Caleb, I mean, Scott, birds work differently. I know you've had that experience because I have.
Yeah. I mean, one thing to keep in mind on these schools, too, as they start forming up, they're not, we picture it all as like one big school. And there may be 3 or 4 or 5 schools working the same group of bait in the same vicinity. So, like Caleb was saying, you know, the birds sit down. Well, that's where they last saw it. And then they pop up and they go 20 or 30 yards over. That could have been a whole different school of fish that started pushing those birds up.
Yeah.
So when you're in that situation, fan casting is a big, big part of what I like to do.
Yeah. You know,
instead of throwing right at the birds, let's throw off to the side. Fish got fins. They're moving. The birds, when they sit down, they're just like we are. They're like, well, where'd they go?
Yeah.
You know, and they're just waiting for the next sign. So you don't necessarily have to wait for the next sign. When they sit down, you can start casting all around it and go do a little exploring. Maybe move off. You know, they may have gone back behind you. You know, turn around and try it again in that same little area. Then when the birds do pop back up and start working again, then ease back in on them.
You know, and another thing is whenever those birds quit working or like we were talking about, they'll get pressured and just fly away. You don't have them there anymore. You keep scanning the area real hard and watching for a shrimp to jump, because a lot of times those birds are leaving because our boat's there. And you watch that little shrimp pop. Well, that's what that bird was looking for.
Yeah.
So you can essentially be your own bird once they key you into the zone that you need to be looking for it at.
And you will see them. I saw them this past Sunday. You know, I'm kind of puttering up against it. Kind of ties in with both your points. You know, fishing around necessarily, don't fish just on necessarily the birds, but around the birds. I was kind of puttering up, had my trolling motor, and I saw 2 shrimp. Just boop, boop, you know, right to my right. I just shut it down, cast right there, and caught a fish. Man, this was, oh, one more thing on that. Sometimes, more times than not in my experience, just real quick from both you guys, however a bird, a group of birds are working, that's generally how they're going to work almost in that entire base system, because I've been on base systems where the birds, you can barrel up on them. They're just so, you know, focused on, and it's so intense. You can yell at them, you can throw it right at them, and they're not going to move. They're just going to keep working. Others, as I said, might just be sitting. But whatever the behavior is in one location, it changes occasionally. There's always exceptions. If you move another half mile and you see birds working, it's going to be the same thing, right, Scott?
Yeah, they're working the same kind of bait.
Yeah.
As we see the same thing with redfish. You know, if I know that guys on one end of the bay are doing a certain thing, catching redfish, the redfish are doing the same thing on my end. Trout the same way. You know, they're all going after the same kind of bait.
What I think you're seeing is a result of how the fish are feeding that day.
Yeah.
If the fish are really, like, whenever I was on those redfish yesterday, you could get all over them and they couldn't care less about you. Exactly. Today, they're a bit more spooky. I think it's the same way with when birds are working trout, where whenever you show up and the trout are just going off and they're shoving that bait to the top, well, the birds are going to stay there. They're going to be real aggressive. They're going to be diving down. And then other days when the fish are a little bit more spooky and maybe they got after a raft of bait, but then your motor, or your pole slap or something, then those fish scatter, and that's where the birds are just going to scatter and get out of there as well. I'll add one thing while we were talking about, you know, you find the birds, and yes, fan casting is absolutely fantastic. And, or if you can find a group of birds that's 30 yards wide, right? There's always going to be one or two or maybe three spots in that 30 yards that there's consistently going to be two or three birds coming down and hovering. Throw under those two or three birds, please. Please, for every guide out there, sanity, when those two or three birds come down, that's there telling you the fish are right here. Can you fan cast and catch more? Yes. But if you want to fish right now, cast under those two or three that are down hovering. I feel,
or,
like,
or fluttering. You know, I've seen like two, like all of a sudden they flutter their wings like they're about to, you know, to come up. And,
yeah, they're seeing those fish flash underneath them, and they're fluttering to see if a shrimp's coming with it.
Right.
I feel like the majority of the people out there don't understand that particular aspect of it. Is when those birds get down and get low real fast, yeah, I try to knock their feet out from under them. I mean, I'm waiting on it. Sometimes I'm holding my rod waiting on it if I feel like they're about to do it.
Oh, for sure.
And it's the same way with redfish too. You know, they've been helping us with redfish, and that bird will be up there circling and looking. But when he dives down and gets real tight, there's something there that he sees, and that's what you're wanting to see as well.
All right, Scott, scottnullphotography.com. Before we get out of here to get some bite meat, what's the latest on that? Is Camille, I saw her hovering behind you. Are we still good on a stock of shirts and buffs and hats?
Yeah, I'd have to check. I know that we're out of some sizes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I know we got plenty of hats and stickers. I know that. I moved that box a couple of times last week.
Okay.
plenty of hats and stickers. The shirts, I mean, it's spotty. You know, as far as the really big sizes are pretty much gone. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot more in the middle.
All right. Well, we'll get some more of those. I know she'll be on it. Also get Scott's, boy, you posted that great picture, which I had a sneak peek of before it was posted at the contest of the Cardinal. That's an incredible shot. They can buy that one, I think, as of now, right, Scott? At scottnullphotography.com.
I have turned those over to Camille, and it's up to her to get them on the website.
All right. That sounds like a plan. Captain Caleb TV, I know you're booked this month, but what's going on in terms of your guiding? But what's going on Captain Caleb TV? When are we going to get another one of these great performances that we do on here?
Scott, we're really going to have to work about your enthusiasm and marketing, bud.
Like, I don't know.
How are you a rep? How do we do that? Hey, man, Wilderness have any kayaks? Man, I see Camille in the back pointing herself, and I believe it 100%. Man, you know, maybe. Now, I'm out until November 23rd at this point, fishing every day. Then I come back for Thanksgiving, and then I have a long stretch in December. I swear to y'all, I'm taking my gear down to Matagorda. This sounds dumb, but the fishing has been too good to record all weekend. I've had a net in my hand for four days.
That sounds great.
You know, And then I had all kinds of time to record today, but who wants to record what was happening today is watching the wind whistle. But now we're getting back into it. I have something new. I'm not going to announce it just yet. I have something new that we'll talk about it in December. How about that?
All right.
And one of the results is going to be a lot more FaceTime with me and the audience out there.
And thanks to your friend and mine, Caleb, Mike Butler, joining us here on the podcast, Anglers Anonymous. You probably heard that already. I am all about those Naughty Hooker jig heads now. That's pretty much all I buy. And he's got them all over there. But Anglers Anonymous is doing a good job. Go ahead.
Mike Butler was with me yesterday. He did not tell me. I knew that y'all were in talks. I'm incredibly excited because I've really wanted to talk about how much I love that store and how much great stuff they have in there. So
it's a neighborhood. It's a good feel. And he's a fisherman, except he doesn't fish now because he's got a store.
Well, he went out and grinded all day long with old Pat Gardner yesterday. But no, that's very exciting for anglers to come on board and, open up an avenue for me to kind of talk about what's going on there. So that's very exciting. I'm glad to have Mike here.
All right, boys. We went a little bit long today, and I like to keep him right about an hour. So what would Scott do? He would catch fish. What would Caleb do? He would catch fish. Is that the abbreviated version?
I tell you
birds,
what I got to do.
Birds are working.
I tell you what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going to get all the stuff I broke today fixed. I had to cancel tomorrow to fix stuff from today.
Scott, anything other than birds, what are the redfish doing real quick?
Just Caleb breaking stuff.
Yeah. It happens a lot.
This is Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
I'd get out there and look for those birds.
Yeah. I'm glad we had that. You know, it's funny. We also have these timely topics.
Fun in the fall.
It's not by accident.
It's just a fun way to get out there and have a good time. Enjoy yourself with it. The redfish, I think the tide's going to go back up pretty good. Just looking at the weather, we got southeast blowing pretty hard. This next norther coming in Thursday night, it's going to be northeast again, I think. So I don't think we're going to see another dump yet.
Yeah.
One of these fronts is going to come along here and dump us out again, and we'll have that going for us. But I would think if the redfish just get into the back lakes and start looking, they should be schooled up pretty good and chasing shrimp.
What are you doing?
I was itching my mustache.
You got an itch on your mustache. Looks like you're hushing yourself. All right, boys, man. Great episode. Great show. I lost track of time here. It went not too long, but it's always fun when it feels like it's just a 10-minute show and it's over an hour. But I like to keep them right about that time. Thanks to Chad Battles for coming in. We got to get him on again. Good stuff on Louisiana. Of course, Scott and Caleb, don't forget to subscribe anywhere you can get a podcast. Join us. I'll be interested to see your stories on the lengths you went to just to go fishing because you had the itch. We shared that earlier in the podcast. I'll be interested in that on the Facebook group page. But until next time, man, catch them up. Have a great time, and we'll see you next time.